family practice physician. I went to Cedarville for my undergrad, and then I went to Des Moines, Iowa for medical school, and then I went came back to Pennsylvania for residency training in Williamsport area. And originally a farm kid in Potter County, Gallatin, Pennsylvania. For those of you who just know New York State geography, that's pretty much right below Corning, New York. So over that way. I came to know the Lord when I was 5 years old, and I went to the Potter McKean Fair and heard the wordless book presented by Child Evangelism Fellowship. So God worked through that. When I was in high school, I read the book Doctar, who's the missionary physician who started the hospital over in Bangladesh back in the 60s. And yeah, just God's had his hand on directing me. Sometimes I've been willing to go. Sometimes I've been a little bit more stubborn about that. But yeah, I think the last time I was here was sometime, I don't know, spring of 99, fall of 98, somewhere in there. So it's been just a few years. I used to be only 30. Now I'm about 50. So anyway, time passes. And just wanted to share about, this might seem a bit odd, but we'll get to the point. So the Philistines had long been enemies of Israel. And they're now met on a battlefield. They're on both sides of a valley. The Philistines have sent out a warrior, a giant, named Goliath. And he's their champion. Every day, he comes out and he says, okay, you guys sent out a soldier, a warrior. If your warrior can defeat me, then the Philistines will serve Israel. Otherwise, if I defeat your warrior, then Israel will serve the Philistines. So far, no Israeli soldier has been willing to take up that challenge. Along comes David. David's a shepherd boy, the youngest son. He's never been in the military. He has no experience with war. However, he sees that his God is being insulted. And so he offers to fight the enemy. So Saul clothed David with his armor, and he put on his head a helmet of bronze, and he covered him in a cloak of mail. And David strapped on his sword. And David tried in vain to go, but he could not because he had not tested them. So he said to Saul, I cannot wear this, for I have not tested it. And David put the armor off. Then David, he had a staff in his hand, and he went over to the brook, and he picked up 5 smooth stones, and he put them in his shepherd's pouch. And he also had a sling with him. So David went towards the Philistine. The Philistine came out. His shield bearer was before him. And when the Philistine saw David, he despised him, for he was but a youth, handsome and ruddy. And the Philistine said to David, what do you think I am, a dog, that you come at me with sticks? And he cursed David in the name of his gods. Then he said to David, come to me, and I will feed your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. David said to the Philistine, you come to me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the army of Israel, whom you have defied. In this day he will give you into my hand, and I will strike you, and I will cut off your head, and I will feed the flesh of the host of the Philistines, the birds of the air, and the beasts of the earth. And all of the earth will know that there is a God in Israel, and all this host, the army of the Philistines, will know that the Lord does not defeat by sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. So the Philistine rose up and came towards David. And David ran towards the line of battle. He took a stone from his pouch, put it in his sling, and he slung it. And the stone went into the forehead of the Philistine and sunk down in. And the Philistine fell face down onto the ground. So David prevailed with sling and stone, and David had no sword in his hand. And he went and he stood over the Philistine, and he reached down and he took his sword from the sheath, killed the Philistine, and cut off his head. And when Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. I want to make it clear here. The point is not to compare me with David. The point is to compare my God with David's God. The same God who fought David's battles fights mine, fights ours, even when we, our armor, and the weapons seem inadequate for the task. I've heard some of your praises and your prayer requests. And sometimes you as well probably feel that the challenges are just too much. You can't go on. Maybe you're destined to fail. You can't overcome. When I returned to the field of Bangladesh in January of 2013, we had a team there that included 4 primary care doctors, family practice physicians. From January to June, we went down to 1 doctor, 1 full-time, and we stayed that way for the next 4 years. And that was very challenging. Challenging in terms of the workload. I'll admit, challenging in terms of not having a daily pity party for myself. It was a challenge to praise and serve the God who, by all outward appearances, seemed to maybe have forgotten me. But God had been preparing me for this all along the way, and he did not abandon me. And so I saw patience and watched God work. Much of our patient population is hampered in its access to health care. Rimon was no exception. He lived on a remote island. It took his family at least 3 hours to rush him to the hospital. By the time he got there, he was barely breathing. And by the time I ate my sandwich and got to the clinic, he was not breathing, and my heart was racing almost as fast as his was. Our anesthesia team came and put a tube down and breathed for him while I was trying to figure out what kind of anti-venom to give him. Rimon had been bitten by a snake. Now, we give some anti-venom. We want to make sure they actually were bitten by a snake because it's expensive and we have to hand carry it in either from India or Thailand. The other thing, though, is I have never given it to a 3-year-old child. So I'm trying to figure out the dose, reading the directions. What do the directions say? Ask your doctor in the case of a pediatric patient. This is the package insert. So then I check my pocketbook, and it revealed that the American text, of course, only cover rattlesnake bites. Imagine that. So anyway, we sort of figured out his weight and kind of scaled things down and figured out a dose to give him. It looked like it had been a cobra bite. And the other thing that had happened is his family had tourniqueted his arm where he had been bitten. And so with a tourniquet, cutting off the blood supply as well as the cobra venom, he ended up losing a lot of skin on his hand. Sure enough, his family went back home, and the next day they found out that it was a cobra eggs that he was so fascinated with and was playing with, a good-sized cobra, and then they found his wife as well. So it took Rimon several days to wake up, and then he was there for several weeks of wound care to deal with this hand wound. But God prevailed, and we sent home a well, if naughty, boy and a family that had multiple opportunities to hear truth and to see love in action over that 2 to 3 week time span. Will God provide what we need? We worry about so many things. God reminded Abraham that he would take care of him. In Genesis 15:1, we see, after these things, and that was after Abraham had delivered Lot. After these things, the word of the Lord came to Abraham in a vision, saying, "Fear not, Abram, I am thy shield and thy exceeding great reward." He is our protector and our provider. During my last term, around the country of Bangladesh, there were multiple murders of Westerners, including a terrorist attack in Dhaka in early July of 2016, and that left 20 people dead. Most of the time during the term, our travel was restricted. In some sense, often we had to take a police escort if we were traveling in a local area. And I felt very safe. We were a long ways away from Dhaka on a rural compound. However, this was very difficult news for many of our short-termers, and actually many students and residents were denied permission to come because of this going on. Short-termers on the ground were often consumed with fear. We spent many hours working on contingency plans and negotiating what was safe versus what was practical. My sister and her family came to visit, and even they had to change their plans. We had to take a speedboat to catch a plane a day early due to the road closings. And that is a Bengali speedboat, even though it might not look like it. There is also the morning that I was sitting and working on a chart when the breaker box 3 feet away burst into flames. Yes, there was that. A bit unnerving, but he is our shield. He is our protector. And time again, he provided both resources and strength. He gives us the stamina that we need. It was late in December on a weekend call day. Already been a long day. We did 3 C-sections so far. And they called from the gate, would we go out and see another obstetrical patient? The answer is always yes. We at least go out and evaluate, even if we can't take care of everyone. I joined the midwife so that we could do this quickly, and hopefully I could get home and get to church. But when I went to evaluate the mom, she was not very cooperative. And when I looked her in the eye, I could tell why. She was blue, foaming at the mouth. She was barely breathing, and her oxygen level was half normal. We rushed her into the operating room to give her and her baby a chance. It's hard to describe the heaviness in my chest, seeing the blue lips of the mom and pulling out the baby, whose only evidence of life was a barely perceptible gasp. But Emmanuel, God with us, and both of them lived. Thankfully, Mom doesn't remember the terrible things I had to do to her when she wasn't quite asleep yet. Sometimes low oxygen to the brain can be a good thing. When I talked to her 2 days later, after we had taken out the breathing tube, she told a story of how she had started feeling bad early that morning and had gone from hospital to hospital, and no one would take them in. Does that story sound vaguely familiar? It's Christmas and a woman in labor with nowhere to go. I still follow Selena with her heart valve disease that she didn't know she had. Her little girl will be 4 this December. Too many days, I worried about coping with one more disaster, how to deal with that, and usually thinking about it was the major problem. God provides each given moment and catastrophe for each given moment and catastrophe, but not necessarily a whole lot ahead of time. And he asked for obedience from us. Early in my term, I read The Insanity of God by Nick Ripken. In this book, he records what he learned while working in Somalia, or learned about God at that point in time, and then what God taught him about faith and persecution around the world as he went to many different countries and interviewed folks that had suffered trials and tribulations. The account that struck me the most was as follows. In Russia, he heard about a deacon prompted by God in the middle of a bitter Siberian winter night. He was to harness his horse and take food to a starving family 20 miles away. Their father had been imprisoned for his faith. The deacon protested, Lord, I might freeze. My horse might freeze. Lord, there are wolves out there. I might not make it back. But the spirit told him, you don't have to come back. You just have to go. So he went. Even when there is no promise of return, we have to go where and when he leads. It's not easy, but that's obedience. And I have a disclaimer here. If anybody's even slightly squeamish, turn away, because this is just a little bit ghastly. And if you're really squeamish, plug your ears and tell your neighbor to poke you when we're done. But there are those days when the unimaginable happens. A dare, a challenge, a boy in a tree, and he fell, impaled by rebar. His face was underwater in the construction field. His friends had to hold up his head so that he could breathe. They brought hacksaws to hack off the rebar. He traveled to the hospital, more power saws. The one piece of metal so close to his heart that it pulsated with each beat. And God's gift of life. We were unusually busy. All the ORs were full in that late afternoon, but God set everything in motion so that this boy would live, skewered for a chance to hear of grace and truth. And then there are those that you don't save. You invest hours of love and care, and God takes them to himself. Shukumar was a boy who had battled chronic kidney disease. We treated him for over 5 years. During that time, his mother came to know the Lord. Mahadul was also dear to us. He had intestinal blockage, and eventually pneumonia won the battle. We grieved, and yet we had to keep going. It can be hard to retain hope. In terms of resources and facilities, sometimes it seems that we have so little to offer. But we have a God who hears our cries. A little girl, Rifa Moni, was admitted to an already busy ward during the rainy season. She was 9 years old and had been drug around by a battery power vehicle for many yards. She had a battered head and a mangled body and remained in a coma for a week. So it was with great joy that I went back to work that Sunday morning after another long weekend on call to see her eyes half open. She was talking on the telephone. It turns out her aunt that was staying with her in the hospital had to ask this little girl, fresh out of a coma, for the phone number. Let's just say the kid was still pretty sharp and a joy to be around. The healing process was long and difficult, but God kept this girl alive and renewed my hope. In addition to see a few patients, I was able to teach a woman's Bible study for our nursing and nurse aid students. Some people ask me what I do to relax. We actually have a tidal river that comes right up to the compound. So I kayaked and also delivered a few babies. I participated in the birth of about 1,600 babies over the last 4.5 years. Just a few babies, and God was good. Also, we're in the middle of a hospital project, building a 100-bed hospital, and I had the opportunity to participate in thanking folks for the gifts they gave, and that was also a great blessing to see how God's providing. It was a $7.6 million project, and we're down to about $900,000 that are left. So we're making good progress. Hope to move into the facility within the next year or so. In 2012, when I was home, I had shared with folks about a Mru man, a tribal man, who had fell from a tree and fractured his spine. The Mru folks live high in the mountains and homes elevated on stilts. And usually the only access is a notched log. I even find it a little challenging to get up there. So this man could no longer get into his own house. He needed a walker to get around. And because of this, he hung around the compound, and our Mru outreach evangelist spent a lot of time with him. He was able to earn a little bit of money and feed himself by carving wooden flutes. Often we saw him sitting in odd places around the compound. Over time, his heart softened to the gospel in spite of this tragedy in his life, and he accepted Christ and desired to obey and make it public through baptism. He also wanted a new name that would reflect the changes in his life. So Lazarus was baptized in our compound swimming pool. Heartbreak and joy sometimes go hand in hand. Paki Moni was 11 or so. She came in with a horribly swollen abdomen, her belly. We were too late to do anything medically. 11 years old, and she had colon cancer. It was totally obstructed, so we made her more comfortable and spent time with her, and her heart was soft as only a child's heart can be. She, too, came to know the love and forgiveness of Christ before her parents took her home to die. And so we go out, not knowing if we will return, and we fight the battles that he brings to our doorstep in hopes of saving some. And while I confess, it's a heady experience to save a life, and God has given me that opportunity from time to time. Yet, all of my patients will ultimately die. All of my efforts will crumble to dust. So we persist on a different level in hopes of snatching some from the flames. Recently, one of our experienced national church planners shared, "It is what you do at the hospital that allows us to do what we do, because people appreciate the excellent, compassionate medical care they receive. They are more open to hearing the good news." We were encouraged to see 31 people come to know the Savior through the hospital in 2016, as well as more than 150 who asked for spiritual follow-up. And we ask that you would pray with us that the sharing of our faith may become more effective for the full knowledge of every good thing that is in us for the sake of Christ. Pray that our team would be bold, active, and effective in sharing our faith. Since I left the field a month ago, we've had a new crisis. Many of you would have learned about the country of what would have been Burma, now is Myanmar, or depending if you listen to the British, they pronounce it yet a little bit more differently, and the Rohingya crisis. What you might not know is this is right next door to Bangladesh. So there has been a Rohingya camp hour and a half from our hospital for the last 20-some years. We've had very little contact with them. It's all limited to Doctors Without Borders who care for them. We've never been able to have any kind of spiritual impact. Occasionally, they will send up a patient with a serious surgical problem or an obstetrical problem to our facility. Now the Myanmar government and military has gone in and burned hundreds and hundreds of homes, actually thousands of homes, killed hundreds and hundreds of people. People are fleeing and being shot and running into landmines in the process. So we have been asked to provide surgical care for these folk, and a lot of them are many days out. The infections are horrible. They're in terrible condition, of course, malnourished and exposed to the elements for a long period of time as well. It's still finishing up the rainy season there, so mud and muck everywhere. And in addition to that, so the Rohingyas are Muslim. Burma, Myanmar is Buddhist, and that's part of the whole thing. The other thing is just property, land, resources, things that people have gone to war and fought with each other for thousands and thousands of years. But the local community wants to make sure that we are using our resources to help them. The country itself is struggling with how to help these people because Bangladesh itself is poor and has limited resources, how to help these people, but yet also send the message to Myanmar that this will not be tolerated, this kind of behavior. So at present, we've been given permission to provide surgical care only. Obviously, though, if they're in our facility, we can also share hope and truth and light. We've had this open long enough that some are well enough that they could be discharged. We don't want to send them back to the camp. They won't get any wound care there. So we've actually put up two tents, one for women, one for men, on the back part of our compound. We're going in and still helping with the wound care there, as well as our evangelists are working with these folks and continue to be able to share the gospel with them. So it's a disaster, it's a crisis, it's a tragedy, but God's using it also to open doors to get his truth to these folks. So that's my story for the past 4.5 years and some of the story for the past 20 years.